Can you start a podcast?
It's been a while, dude. It's been a while. It's been like months since we've done this.
Six months.
What's a podcast?
What even is one?
What is it?
A podcast is what you want to make it, so.
What is a podcast? how you doing, John?
How am I?
How are you?
I'm good. Eye. You?
What's that?
How are you?
I'm good.
What, any I'm life good. Changes? It's been a while.
I had a kid.
Yeah, you did. He's a cutie.
Yeah. Last time, I suppose, we recorded. Elizabeth was still pregnant. Thank you for all the prayers. Blaze was born on June 21st via emergency C-section. That was great.
Yeah. I kind of knew it was happening.
Shout out to all of the staff at the Aurora Medical Center, I don't know, and tours, whatever it's called. What is it called?
Aurora Medical Center, Manitowoc County.
Yeah.
AMCMC.
Big shout out to everyone in the labor and delivery department there. Dr. Garvin Crest, especially, just phenomenal, phenomenal nurses, phenomenal doctors over there. We went in for an induction on that day, Friday the 21st, because Beth was about 10 days overdue. So you're kind of at that range where it's like, we really don't want to wait any longer.
Right.
So with an induction, you know, they give you a medication that speeds along the process, right? And she was already kind of dilated a little bit, which is great. So just trying to push the process along. But since they've got like fetal heart monitors, they're able to get in. And every time she would have a contraction while on that medication, his heart rate would plummet.
Oh.
So we think it was just kind of some sort of stress with the contraction itself. And it would shoot back up after the contraction was over. And we tried a couple different positions or whatever.
Yeah.
And nothing really seemed to really help. So we were there maybe 6 hours and it just kept happening. And it was getting like below 60 beats per minute.
It's pretty low.
It's pretty low for a baby.
I don't know the exact number. So I'm sorry to my wife out there who knows everything about this world. And this is probably the only part of the podcast that she's even going to listen to. Because she needs to know everyone's birth story. But that's pretty low.
So they came in and Doc said, we're going to do an emergency C-section. So, I mean, they made a call on within 3 minutes. The room was packed with doctors.
Yeah, man, we take that stuff.
It was so fast. They got his heart rate back up, so they weren't like in a super big rush. But I'm not. It was like she called it, and like 15 minutes later, Beth was in the operating room. So I got to put on all the garb, and they prepped her, and I was able to go in, and
yeah, everything. What was that experience like? Because I know what it's like to be in that OR, but
it's
for somebody that's like, not in the medical field.
I don't know if it's like selfishly myself, I'm like, oh, well, I'm not super excited about my son's heart rate plummeting, but also now that you've had C-section, it's a great, all right, it's over.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to be done with this now. Cause so they have like one of the monitors like shows the baby's heartbeat. Right. And I was like, this is the worst thing you could have in front of me. Cause I'm watching it like a hawk and I'm watching like the contraction start and his heart rate drop. I'm like looking around like, where the hell, what's going on?
Yeah.
So I got to sit by Beth's head and, you know, the doctors do what the doctors do for a C-section. And they pull them out and that first cry hits you and just babies cry. And
yeah,
I probably bawled more than he did. I was just so happy that he was safe and alive and healthy. First thing that the nurses said is, oh, man, he's got some big feet.
Your son does have some pretty big feet.
They're pretty big feet.
Yeah. He should be a swimmer.
He's growing into him a little bit because he's finally starting to get. So he's 5 months old now. On Thursday, he'll be 5 months old. So, like, he's starting to get some fat, which is good. His leg is starting to get chubby. He's starting to grow into him a little bit, which is good. But, yeah, that was an experience. It was not. I don't know. I mean, I was happy that it was over. I'm happy my wife didn't have to go through the pains of childbirth that way, but
different type of pain though.
Yeah, they did a great job, and yeah. Her recovery was stellar. And man, now I've got a kid.
Yeah, man. Sleep training.
I was thinking about. I kind of anticipated, like, how has fatherhood been? And I'm like, I don't really know how to answer this question because I've never been so happy / sad / angry / not depressed, but I've never had such a lower self-worth about myself.
Yeah.
All at the same time.
Yeah, and you can feel that all within a span of 30 minutes.
Right. I'll just go like, this is the greatest thing in the world. I can't wait to do this like 4 times, God willing. I could do this 4 or 5 times, God willing. And then I'll go like, I'm the worst father ever. This is the only baby we're ever going to have. I'm never doing this again. It's just like, it's the pendulum is just so.
Yeah.
You know.
I feel that. I feel that.
But, you know, God is good and Blaze is healthy, and that's really all we can.
Right.
It's all we can. It's all we could have asked for is that he's
right.
Happy and healthy. And he's definitely healthy and happy most of the time.
Yeah, his baby's, you know.
He's a baby, yeah.
He's a baby.
He loves the dancing fruit.
The dancing fruit.
Have you seen the dancing fruit?
Yeah, you showed me the dancing fruit when I was over there.
It's Hey Bear Baby Sensory. It's a channel on YouTube, and they've got a live stream of dancing fruit.
Nice.
And if you're asking what that is, it's exactly what it is.
Dancing fruit.
It's dancing fruit. It's fruit
bobbing on the
on a black TV. Screen, yeah. Bobbing along to some hi-fi music.
Nice.
It's the best thing.
He loves
the oranges.
It would be ironic if when you start salads that he hates fruit. Kind of ironic.
Because he's like, oh, I just saw this banana like, dancing up there, and now I'm eating it.
Yeah, I don't want to eat it. These are my friends, man. Not food.
Yeah, no, so man. It's great. I highly recommend it.
Yeah.
I recommend it.
Being a dad's pretty cool.
Yeah, being a dad's pretty cool. Your daughter's doing well.
She is. She's pretty, she's moving around way too quickly now. You put her down and then 2 seconds later she's gone. So, that's
good.
Been fun.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. I had a baby proof, like the whole house. She's starting to like walk along furniture. So that's pretty fun. Like walking with like a walker thing. So that's been, and she's just been babbling like crazy. I think we were just in Disney and I think she said dad like 5 million times when we were there. I don't know, I wasn't counting, but yeah, she's really just babbling a lot, talking a lot, drooling a lot. But she's starting solids now, but she's sassy when it comes to eating. Like we do like some, you know, handheld, you know, pincer grass foods, and then I have like a packet of food as well. Because she doesn't eat a ton, but now she's like picky and choosy. She's like, like she'll turn her head. I'm like, are you for real, man? I used to be able to shove anything in your mouth, and now you have opinions. Like,
just like her aunt.
Yeah, gosh, yeah, she has opinions now. What is this? So that's been a lot of fun, but no, she's cool. I mean, I like her a lot.
Yeah, parenthood's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's exhausting, man.
It's exhausting.
It's like tiring as heck. But and then like the funny thing is like you're exhausted, and then the next day you do it again.
Yeah, yep. It's all it's just not, a reset.
It's like nothing else in life. Like anything else, like a work. Like, all right, I got the weekend. No,
there's no weekends.
No. It's like, oh, I gotta do this all again tomorrow. Hopefully it's a good day. I don't know, man. It might suck.
I've always wanted to get on like a normal schedule, like a sleep, going to sleep and waking up kind of at the same time every day. I wanted to stop sleeping in until like 9-10 o'clock.
Oh,
that
yeah.
doesn't happen anymore.
No, God.
So
no, I slept until 7 today.
Whoa!
I know that was amazing. I was like, Laura, it's 7 o'clock. She's like, what?
That's
like, it's 7. She's like, that is so late.
That's the greatest thing I've ever heard in my entire
Yeah, it was great.
Entire life. My wife slept till like 8:30.
Good morning. For her though.
Yeah. I was already out the door at 7, yeah. So it was great.
Yeah. No, I mean, sleeping in's fun.
Yeah, it's great. It's the, you don't.
Yeah. There's
two levels you can like appreciate when you're single or you're marrying without kids. And you're like, you sleep in, you're like, oh yeah, that was great. And then there's,
yeah,
you're a parent and you're sleeping in because your baby just had like the best night of sleep ever. And you're like,
you feel like a new human.
It's
honest to God.
Groundbreaking.
I wake up and I'm like,
groundbreaking.
I feel great. I don't even need my coffee today.
Guess what Aaron Rodgers felt on ayahuasca?
his 3-day darkness retreat just comes out. I feel great. The sun's literally blinding me, but I feel great right now. Can't imagine going from a pitch black place to like all of a sudden stepping outside for like 3 days in pitch darkness, pitch black darkness. And then all of a sudden step outside.
That's gotta not
your eyes have got to mess with
you. It's gotta be bad for you somehow. Anyway, we're back.
We're back.
We're back. We are so back.
I'm not sure when
back.
We're gonna do this again.
We're
but.
Back. We're so back. So we're joined, friend of me at least anyway, Lorenzo Sanchez. How you doing, man?
Hey, what's up? I'm glad to be here.
Get a little bit more on that mic. There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. It's perfect.
Okay. We've been trying to get you on the show for like months. The first time I asked you, you gave me a fake phone number.
I need
Let's
to know
talk
the story.
About that. That's such a funny story.
I think you had a little bit too many, one or two too many cervezas.
Did you give a fake number?
Cervezas.
You okay. gave me a wrong. You gave me a. You just, I think you just gave me the wrong.
I gave you the wrong number. Okay, so the very first time that you and I met, Cam, was at the Saints and Spirits that's hosted by the church. And
my wife
that night, what's up?
My wife,
yeah,
my wife,
yeah. Lorenzo, it seems, might have had a slippery finger that night when he was typing in his number in your phone
for no particular reason.
Yeah, for no particular reason, he might have had a bit too much fun.
That's all right.
So who'd you text? Did they text back?
No.
No. Okay. I like reached out. I'm like, I was talking to my wife. I'm like, I texted Lorenzo like twice. He hasn't messaged me back at all. I'm like, I'm kind of hoping I run into him at Mass. And every time I saw him at Mass, like he ran out right away. I'm like, what's going on?
He ran out right away.
Is that like not like me? What's going on? I thought we had a good
fake number. He's ditching me from Mass.
You know what's something funny?
It's like stepping out.
You know, after that night at Saints and Spirits, I thought to myself, like, you know, man, I thought like me and Cam really connected. Like, we had like a great conversation. And I was like, oh, shit, I probably got way too drunk. And it wasn't a great conversation. He's probably like, yeah, this guy, he can't handle his drinks. That's why he never texted me back.
I never texted.
And like, it's like 2 months had passed by until the church picnic. When Cam at the bar was like, hey, dude, you know, I texted you like months ago, like, you never replied. And I was like, no way. I pull out my phone and I show his number. I have it saved. And I'm like, I never got a text from you. Look here. He's like, no way.
And sure enough, like, wrong number.
Yeah. I gave him the wrong number.
That's all right. I went to college. I got a couple of fake phone numbers, so it's fine. That's not true.
Oh, that's a great story.
That's a story.
But you're here now. That's the important thing. Uh-huh. You already dodged us once. You can't dodge us again.
You're stuck now.
We're here.
Yeah, I'm chained to this chair. Darlene, help me.
In the basement of the parish office.
Yeah. Yeah. Super not sketch. Yeah.
Well, the weird thing is that this building used to be a medical office. So, like...
Is that why there's needles in the corner?
Oh,
no,
man.
It's actually, if you walk into any of the offices, that's why the windows are so high up, because for privacy reasons, because these used to be medical offices.
Huh. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they asked me for their colonoscopy a little while ago.
Dude. Okay. Yeah,
it's good. Got to get their colonoscopies, man.
I have to put an explicit tag in. In sworn once, now he's talking about colonoscopy.
Hey, man, everybody poops. Everybody's got one.
Darlene's probably thinking to himself, you had one beer. You had one beer before the podcast.
Now he's talking about somebody who's not even on the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
This is a great start, man. It's the best.
You asked before we started. You're like, do we have any tequila? I'm like, do you have any tequila?
I don't have any.
You can go by Quick Trip, whatever it's called, real quick.
Where are you from, Lorenzo?
I'm from South Texas. From
do they
town
not
called
have...
Brownsville.
Where's Brownsville?
Brownsville, Texas.
Brownsville is on the border of Mexico by the sea, the farthest southern city on the tip of Texas.
For real?
Yeah,
by the Gulf.
You want to know something crazy? That's I'm learning really Spanish.
Then. You're learning Spanish right now?
I'm a fourth generation American. I know that might be hard to believe. I look like I'm like a full-blooded Mexican. I guess you could say I am.
Yeah.
But people in that part of Texas are very much Americanized because that part of Texas, that like has been part of the U.S. for the past like almost 200 years.
Sure.
And I mean, people stay there that for like generations. So
that still surprises me though, with being so close to like in southern Texas, I feel like you'd still have some like, at least in school, like, did you learn Spanish in school?
Yeah, there were Spanish classes. Like, I'd say that for the most part, the region is very much bilingual.
Okay.
But it's like its own interesting cultural bubble. It's not quite, like, Mexican or not quite American.
It's Tex-Mex. It's Chipotle. It's Chipotle, man.
Yeah, it's even like its own sub-niche within the Tex-Mex, right. Like, culture. It's just otherworldly.
Yeah.
That's how I would describe it.
So Brownsville is what it's called?
Yeah, Brownsville. Yeah.
All right. So born and raised in Brownsville.
Yep, that's right. Born and raised in Brownsville.
Okay.
And then I moved to Austin for college.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Where did you go to UT there?
Yeah, Hook'em Horns.
Hook'em, man.
UT Austin.
They're pretty good at football now. They were, and then they weren't, and now they are again, right?
When I was there, they sucked.
They were not very good for a while.
Yeah. Well, they were good.
No, they were good,
and then they weren't good, and then
now they are good.
Now they are good until they play somebody who's good, and then they're not good, but then they're good again.
Yeah, well, what's the record? I don't know.
I think they lost one game so far.
It's better than Badgers, man. I'm a Badger, and I'm not super thrilled about being a Badger football fan right now.
It's Wisconsin sports. It's Wisconsin sports. It's fine.
Hey, man, we got women's volleyball.
We right?
Women's hockey.
I played around when I was in college. I almost went down to Austin, moved down to Austin. Just because I was like, I need to get out of Wisconsin.
It's one of the fastest growing cities in America right now.
It is. I think to its detriment.
To its detriment? What do you mean by that?
Well, because when you have such an influx, they have an influx of people, especially from the West, that are coming into Austin. It drives up prices, right?
Well.
So it's growing so quickly. The city changes so much. All of a sudden, you know, it becomes more commercialized. And
yeah.
It used to be this really nice, it used to be a really nice small town. Like it must have been pretty small still when, not really small, but still small town when you were there, right?
No, it was big and growing when I was there.
It was still growing when you were there.
I was there from 2015 to 2019.
Oh, yeah, there it is.
Okay, yeah. That's growing.
Yeah.
So what did you study?
I studied biology.
Cool.
And, you know, when I started studying biology, I didn't really have a faith at all. I didn't have a formed faith. I would say that I was agnostic at the beginning of college.
Okay.
And getting into deeper, high-level science kind of had me atheistic leaning.
Okay.
Especially when I got into genetics and evolution. And then I picked up a book called The Language of God. The Language of God is written by this doctor named Francis S. Collins, and he was like one of the most prestigious scientist doctors of all time in like world history. He's a Nobel laureate, and he was the director of the NIH for the U.S.
Oh wow!
And he spearheaded the Human Genome Project. So when I heard that that guy was raised agnostic, turned atheist, turned Christian, I was like, okay, I got to read this book. Because like I had some big questions that weren't answered in college. And I was like always wondering like, you know, like how do you know God's real? How do you know God's not real? So I jumped into that book and it's like super heady. Like you need to have a strong science background to just get through the first few chapters because he's talking about like Big Bang theory, like evolutionary theory, statistics, physics. And I'm getting through it because I'm learning about all these topics in college. And I get to the point where he's finally presenting like all these natural constants. And then he gives his thesis. Like, if you are like a scientist worth your salts and you understand statistics, like you'd be a fool not to believe in God because of the statistical unlikelihood of all this coming into being coincidentally by itself.
Right.
And at that point, I felt fear. I felt like I was being watched for the first time in my life. And I knew it. I felt like, have you ever like walked through a dark hallway or like walked through the woods at night?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
and
yeah.
Always had like a feeling something's watching.
Oh, yeah. No, all the time. Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah. Especially like woods for sure.
I experienced that in my bedroom when I was reading that book. And it was like at nighttime while I was in college. And I was like, I think there's something watching me. Like I think God's watching me. Yeah. And at that point, I had no idea what the nature of God was like. I mean, I was born and raised Catholic. I'm a cradle Catholic. But I went through all my sacraments without believing any of it. I thought it was all complete BS.
Okay.
Like, I never was challenged intellectually in my catechism. Like, we did coloring books, and we had, like, open book examinations, like, for my entire CCD. And, like, it was just, like, totally bare bones. Like, you could show up and that'd be your pass, you know? And I did that from communion to confirmation. And as soon as I finished that sophomore year of high school, I was like, okay, I'm out. Like, I just did this for grandma, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, that's true with a lot of, I think, like a lot of cradle Catholics can, don't feel challenged in their faith because they're raised and then they go through CCD and it's just what they do, you know, and that's what their parents would tell them to do. And there's no challenge of it. And I mean, I was cradle Catholic, a little bit different story, but like, I know so many people in the same boat as you where it's like, yep, grandma wanted me to get confirmed. So that's what I did.
Right. And then you couldn't break grandma's heart.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Don't want to break mom and dad's heart. Don't want to break grandma's heart. So they just did it. But they didn't really understand anything that they were learning, if they were learning at all. Cause I feel like, yeah, I mean, I went through CCD too and it was like pretty surface level. A lot of it was surface level. And maybe that's partially my fault. Maybe it's partially I didn't get into it as much as I could have, but also I feel like that was just kind of what it was. Like,
that's the way I feel too. I feel guilt like I didn't try hard enough, but I also wasn't challenged enough.
That was a product of the generation before us.
Yeah, I agree with that.
There was still the pull to do what needed to be done without really understanding specifically why that was the case. I mean the cynic in me says the Vatican II had some things to do with that all of a sudden everything was so accessible that maybe it was too easy and maybe that's the case, and people were still doing things out of obligation, like it was good to do things that you were obligated to do. That's the generation before us. And then all of a sudden when it came to millennials and we started asking questions, it was just kind of like, shh, watch.
Right, yeah.
You know, you go to mass, shh, watch.
Just believe it.
You know, just shh, watch. Quiet, watch. What am I watching? It's like you're watching a foreign language film or a silent film, and it's just shh, watch. Don't ask questions.
Yeah.
Watch.
Yeah. No, I feel that's...
and you're like, I don't know what's going on. So now, there's a guy going, there's a guy in a robe that's kind of weird, doing some weird stuff. And then they give me a cracker. Like, what's up? You know?
I mean, yeah. Yeah.
And if you don't know anything and you're just told, like, watch, like, that's what you think is going on. Yeah. What is this? I don't...
And a lot of times, too, like, for myself, like, yeah, I believed in God, but that was pretty surface level. Like, I don't really, like... Yeah, I believed in God, but like I didn't know anything about God. I didn't really know any of the rules. I didn't really know any of the beliefs, any of the teachings.
Or
so I was like a really horrible Christian because I was like, yeah, I believe in God, and I'm going to do things that are not Christian. So,
or you're just like presented with a crazy idea, quote unquote, like a crazy idea in Catholicism. You're like, you don't understand anything. And then all of a sudden it's like, hey, by the way, that cracker, quote unquote, that you're talking about, that's actually the body, blood, soul, and divinity of the living God, Jesus Christ.
Right.
So have fun with that.
Yeah. And you're like, oh, okay. Yeah, it all makes sense now.
Like, what? You're like, what? What does that mean? What is that?
Yeah.
You know? So
yeah.
And today that's still such a huge issue. I think something like only like, what, 70% of Catholics believe
not even that. I think in some cases it's disgustingly high.
Yeah, it's disgustingly high.
It's due to poor, I think it's getting better.
Yeah.
But it's just a product of the catechesis before us.
No, no, I agree. Yeah, so you went through the sacraments in childhood, but like
I did,
just did it. Yeah. Like you just did the motions. Didn't get really any faith, so I didn't go to college, read the book.
What was it that made you think it was BS?
Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say never being challenged.
What does that mean? What does that mean?
I can't recall any situation in my catechism where I had to work hard for anything, for an assignment or an exam, or any type of like emotional or spiritual breakthrough. Mm. Like it was all very much cultural and obligatory.
Sure. Mm.
It felt like I'm just going through the motions of everything, and so is everybody else. And like I was there in CCD, and nobody was focused on God. Like when I was in high school, my fellow classmates were talking about getting laid. Like, yeah. I'm going to be totally straight up. Like, it was very cultural. Everybody was there because they were like Hispanic Catholics. And they didn't, it was just what their parents did, what their grandparents did. Like, nobody practiced Catholicism, Christianity. Nobody lived Christ-like lives. And that's what it was.
So the surface levelness of it made it feel like what's the point? What's the deeper point of this whole thing? Like, if we're not...
I don't believe it.
Surface level is almost like, I feel like I'm in school. I'm just learning what school teaches me.
Exactly.
And there's nothing different, you know?
It felt like I was in some, like remedial class.
Yeah, like the way...
All of CCD felt like a remedial class.
CCD for me felt like, you know, in fourth grade, I don't know if Texas did this, but like in fourth grade in Wisconsin, we learned about the state facts, right? Like we learned about the state's history. Like at times for me, that's how CCD felt too, was like, I'm just going through the motions, what everybody else is required to do, and we're just not getting deep at all. So I feel that. I feel it a little bit. But... Yeah. So you didn't feel challenged. You didn't feel like anyone was there to actually learn or not learn about faith, but even have a faith kind of thing. Like nobody was even there to like pray or discuss their challenges in life or where they even saw God. Or it was just kind of like we're there.
I wouldn't want to go as far as say nobody, but I would say that the vast majority of my fellow classmates in CCD, they weren't all in on it. They were there because they had to be there, and it was just like school after school, really. And personally speaking, I would say that I wasn't all in it or searching at that point because I had a bone to pick with God. Back when I was 14, my parents, they filed for a divorce, and it was probably as bad as it gets in terms of how they split up and how they handled the conversation with me, my sister, our family, the terms of the divorce. Like it was just horrible. It was a nightmare, a living nightmare for years. And at that point, I felt like, you know, if God is so good, then why did all that happen to me? Why did I suffer through all of that? You know, maybe God's real, but if he's real, he sure as hell doesn't give a damn about me. And that was what I believed for years and years and years. And that was around when I was 14. And then I finally read that book that I mentioned earlier when I was about 21. And that was at the point when I was like kind of atheistic, agnostic. And then after reading that, I was like, okay, I believe God is real, but I don't know the nature of God. Like I'm still not sold on Jesus. Like he did a lot of big things. Like, I mean, he had some big claims. How does anybody know that was true? And, you know, personally, as a kid, I didn't believe all the big miracles that Jesus did. Like I was like, how do you all know that? That happened 2,000 years ago. I remember being a kid in the pews, sitting around looking at everybody like, how do you all believe this? Like, how does anybody know this? You know?
Yeah. So even from a young age, it was like a challenging. It was like
it
a.
It was.
This doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Show me your evidence.
Yeah, which is very scientific, right?
Yeah,
I guess. You have a biology degree.
Yeah,
so
I
like,
do.
It's very scientific. And even from the get go, it was like, show me the evidence. Like, where's the methods of this?
We have
the
process.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, evidence.
The problem is we have evidence.
Yes.
We do.
We have a ton of
it. It's not taught in CDD.
There's a ton of it.
Yeah.
Well, there's a ton of it. No, don't get me wrong. But
how easy is it that, you know, and I'm not, you know, kids that are like, grew up like you, Lorenzo. It's like, where's your evidence? Okay. Well, it's like, all right, well, do you believe that Egypt existed? Rome? Like, how do we know what Rome looks like? How do we know? Do you believe that, like, the things that happened in Rome happened? Well, yeah. Well, that was 5,000 years ago, and we also have evidence for that. So why do you believe that and not this other thing?
Right, yeah. I mean, right. We do have the evidence, but...
Yeah.
I'm also, like, I feel like there are a lot of times
it's,
where
it's
kids
really,
aren't,
it's
they
really
taught
easy,
that evidence, you know?
It's really easy to say, well, I can totally believe that in Rome, there were gladiators killing each other for sport. Because I've seen humans do that, right? Not specifically killing each other, but humans kill each other. That's been happening forever. Yeah, I can believe that. This man walks on earth and raises the dead. Well, I've never seen anybody raised from the dead. So these two things are kind of in contradiction. Like,
right.
It's not a contradiction, but it's like this dichotomy of, well, I can believe this gladiator thing because I see humans still do that today, but it's really hard for me to believe this man named Jesus raised people from the dead when I've never seen anybody raised from the dead.
Right. Yeah, that was always something I thought about as a kid. Like, if those miracles, as grand as they were, happened 2,000 years ago, why don't miracles happen like that nowadays? And, well, I mean, the truth is that they do. Like, they're just not... I guess covered, and they're not recorded on video too much. There are a lot of miracles that happened in the 21st century, rather 20th century.
I had a really interesting conversation when I came back to the church. It was because we were kind of chatting about why did Jesus come when he did, right? So, like, think about it now. So 2024, recording this, right? So Jesus comes back now, and he does... For the first time, right? He does all the things that he did 2,024 years ago, roughly, right? Plus or minus 30 years. How much easier would it be to believe that that's the case? Where we have photo evidence, video evidence. You could, you know, Peter might have been a live streamer. I don't know. You know, yeah. How much easier would that have been to believe him now? Now, would it be as easy? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not.
Well,
but
yeah.
But we would have all this extra, quote unquote, extra evidence, right, for Jesus existing if he came now than 2,000 years ago, right? So the argument that I was trying to make was that Jesus came at the perfect time because we have evidence for his existence. We have, there's not a historian worth their salt that doesn't believe that Jesus is a real person.
Yeah.
But it takes so much more faith to believe in something that happened 2,000 years ago without the evidence that we have now in 2024. You can also make the same claim that if Jesus came in 2024, it'd be much more difficult.
I think it would be much more difficult because, you know, you see with the technological advances of artificial intelligence, of like if a video were to go viral of Jesus walking on water, you'd have half people being like, this is a miracle. And then you have half people being like, this is AI. You know, like.
I've seen magicians do tricks where they walk on
water.
Well, right.
Yeah. So like. Yeah. I feel like nowadays people would be like,
moon landing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, people question whether that was true or not.
Right. Yeah. So people would be like, conspiracy theory, you know,
right.
You know.
Anytime, any age of the humanity.
Do you think we went to the moon, Lorenzo?
Nah.
No. You don't think we went to the moon?
I think Starbase in South Texas is a popsicle stand.
I think it is far more likely that we totally went to the moon. It totally happened. But all the video evidence that we got was crappy because it was in the 60s. It was in the late 60s. All right. All the video was so bad that nobody would believe it. So then they remade it in an actual studio.
Or Chuck E. Cheese.
And then that's what they sent out. I think that's way more possible that we actually went, but the video and stuff that we got was so crappy that they needed to make it.
I think that's plausible.
I find that's far more plausible than we just didn't go to the moon.
Yeah. There's some great conspiracy theories, but that's a whole nother episode.
That's a whole nother episode. I'm always curious whether or not people believe we went to the... Is the Earth flat or round, Lorenzo? Yeah.
Spherical.
Good. Good. Yeah. Good man. Good. Smart man.
Good call.
Yeah.
All right. So you read this book. You're starting to have this. You're starting to come to this understanding that, all right, all of these things that came into the creation of human life as it is now, statistical improbability. I'm a math guy. I'm totally with you. It is absolutely mega impossible. Right. You've got all the numbers from zero to infinity, negative infinity to infinity in front of you. Take a dart, throw it at the wall. That's the possibility. So you start to have, because of your this logical reasoning, right? You come to this understanding that, all right, God exists. So how do you now start to believe who God is, who this God is?
It took me years to start searching, because at that time, my priority was just to achieve material success. I read that while I was applying for medical school as a biology student, and I was just like reading that for leisure. Like, I was in the middle of a medical school applications, and after I read the book, I was like, okay, well, time to get back to my applications. Like, I wasn't going to church. I wasn't praying. I wasn't hanging out with anybody who had faith in their life. So it actually took me years after that to start searching for God again. And I would say that between the time I read that book and between the time I came to Jesus, I fell darker, deeper and deeper into the darkness in terms of my desires for material possessions and having vice in my life. And it wasn't until I hit rock bottom in the beginning of January 2023, when my business partner betrayed me by pocketing a lot of our construction loan for several real estate projects that we were working on. And that's when I had my coming to Jesus moment, because I had no idea like how I was going to finish the rehab on three properties that were out of state when I was in South Texas, and make a profit and pay off all my lenders and not have to file for bankruptcy, avoid foreclosures. Like it was hell. Like, I was living in hell because it was a nightmare of a situation, and I had no idea what to do. Like, it was beyond the limits of my intellect, beyond the limits of like my capital, my network. And I was like, damn, I think I'd rather just be dead right now, because I don't know what to do. And I'd rather not have to go to prison or like have to start over, you know, file for bankruptcy. And I found myself at a Bible study at a Protestant church. I went, so prior to January 2023, throughout 2022, I went to a few Protestant services. I mean, I went on a date with this one chick, and she was like, hey, we got to go to church. And I was like, oh, I haven't gone to church in like 6 years. Forget that. And she brought me to church. I was like, wow, that was really beautiful. I almost started tearing up. It was just like a non-denominational like Bible church. And they were like, you felt the love as soon as you walked in. And I had never felt that. Never once in a Catholic mass. Like, people reached out to me. They asked me for my number. They invited me to coffee. And I was like, this is church? Like, why aren't you guys like pissed about being here? Like every other Catholic, you know? And things between me and her like didn't work out, so I stopped going to that church for like 8 months. And then that happened beginning of 2023, and I was like, okay, like I'm gonna go back to church. I'm gonna try to fix the situation. So I went to Bible study, and I shared everything with a group of strangers at the Bible study, and so many of them told me like, this is the best thing that's gonna ever happen to you. And like, they told me that to know suffering is to know Jesus. I was like, ha ha ha, that sounds really good. Sure, whatever. And I put my faith in them because of the love they showed me and their conviction and all their words. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do what you all say. Like, go to church, open my heart to God, pray every day, read scripture every day. And I did. I committed to it for like 6 months as a practicing non-denominational Christian. And, you know, ironically, through my studies of scripture, I came back to the Catholic Church. Hmm. Yeah.
What was the scripture reading? Like, was there a specific reading? Was there,
Okay. That's a good question. That's a good question. Yeah. What made you ask that question? Do you think that, did you have a feeling that perhaps God spoke to me through a specific chapter or verse?
Yeah.
Mostly because everybody that comes to the Catholic Church from non-denominational goes the exact same route.
Probably.
Yeah. So what was in scripture?
Well, basically Aaron's son spontaneously combusted, and I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. You're supposed to follow God's will, not your own. Not like every other, you know, and not to knock on Protestant denominations and any other denomination of Christianity outside of the Catholic Church, but it had me realize. So to answer your question specifically, it was in Exodus where the Israelites are in the desert and they are
spent a lot of Exodus in the desert.
Yeah, they spent a lot of it. I was speed reading through Exodus. And so Aaron's son is one of the priests, and he's preparing something like in the camp or in, you know, the tent, whatever it is. And he goes off of the instruction manual. Then he bursts into flames. And then Aaron says, do not tear your shirts. Do not spite the Lord. And that was when I was afraid about what I was reading. I was like, I realized I don't know what I'm reading. And up until that point, I was believing everything. I was believing every interpretation I made of the Bible as fact. Mm-hmm. Because that was the attitude in like the church. Like, yeah, just read the Bible, you know, like just the Lord will speak to you. The Spirit will speak to you. Like, oh, God told me to do this. Oh, God told me to do that. Like, like everybody had a lot of faith in their own interpretation. And that's when I was like, oh, that's not the case after reading that verse. And I stopped reading the Bible for like, honestly, a year and a half. I just started reading the Bible again like 2 weeks ago.
Nice. Wasn't through the Bible in a Year podcast with Father Mike Schmitz.
No, I'm going to be a...
Shameless plug.
I'm going to be a shameless plug. Actually, I purchased the Word on Fire Bible.
By
Bishop Barron.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm reading his commentary on the Gospels, and it's just, oh, it's so heady, it's so brainy. One. It's good, really dude. Good.
Yeah, so if you haven't, stop listening to this. Listen to the Bible in a Year of Father Mike Schmitz. All right, welcome back.
Yeah.
Welcome back. It's good.
There's our
I listened to that one too.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, those two, Father Mike Schmitz and Bishop Barron, are two.
You can't go wrong.
Good dudes. Good dudes.
You can't go wrong.
Yeah.
I met them in person.
Have you met them?
At the Good News Conference this past August. Yeah.
Nice. Both of them?
Both of them, yeah.
Oh, man.
Dude.
I have a picture with Bishop Barron.
Super jealous.
I am really jealous. Is Father Mike Schmitz as, like, just cool in person as he is? Or was it just a quick, like, picture?
I didn't get to talk to Father Mike Schmitz, but I got to see him on stage, and I was, like, feet away from him. Oh, he was giving out the Eucharist the first night, and I was too afraid to go up to him. I was like, he's a celebrity. but he was like full of life and joy. Like I could have just gone in line to get the Eucharist from him. And I was like, I'm going to freak out and drop it or something. So I didn't do it. I went to some random who was giving out the Eucharist. And Bishop Barron, like, he's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Father Mike Schmitz, he's so full of love. He's an authentic person. Yeah.
Yeah. So you read Exodus. Yeah. And then was it that scripture of, like, so if I'm kind of hearing you out correctly, kind of going when people are making their own interpretations of the Bible,
right,
and kind of just free willy-nilly, you know, read right. it and figure out what you want, and then right. that's
no
what
one
you
follows
get out
the
of
doctrine.
It. Right. That scared you.
Yeah, that's when I knew that something was up. And also yeah. when I went to a service and the pastor, like, he was wearing like a Denver's Broncos jersey on stage, like jumping up and down. It was like a rock concert. And he's like, could I say he sucks in church? And I was like, whoa, that was really irreverent. Like, this is all super irreverent. What am I doing here?
Yeah. You're like, I'm at a rock concert right now. Like,
yeah.
And not to bash our brothers and sisters in Christ, but you know,
if you want a rock concert, yeah, go right. to a rock concert.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I had a coworker or a teacher tell me once that she went to one of the non-denominational churches here in Manitowoc. I was like, oh, why do you go there? She said, oh, I just need a good message and some good music. I'm like, watch a TED Talk. What are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah. They're great preachers. I'm not going to lie.
It's good. Like, I mean, it's not like, okay, you go to church, great. Like, you're a Christian, great. You believe in what's going on, great. Awesome. But you miss the point, obviously, if you're like, oh, I just want a good message and some good music.
Mm. Right. That's your will.
Right.
That's
right.
Not the will of God.
Yeah.
And that was my big takeaway from Exodus, that verse in the chapter, you know, Aaron's son was punished for subordinating God's will to his own.
What if Aaron's son was just trying to make some really hardcore metal music? Right, and was setting the stage for
he
the
could do
concert.
That. Just, you know,
like soup,
keep
know.
God out of it,
being,
I guess.
being burst into flames is pretty metal.
Yeah. Yeah. He can do that. Just, you know, don't change my doctrine while doing it.
Yeah.
God's killed people for less.
But no, it's right. interesting to bring that up because it was like, I had a conversation with a coworker too recently, and she was like, yeah, I'm Catholic, but I don't really go. And, you know, and she's like, what makes you, it was a really interesting conversation. And she's like, why do you enjoy being Catholic? And I was like, well, and I was like, how much time you got? But we only had a few minutes, but I brought up, I was like, you know, one thing I like about the Catholic Church is the stability and the doctrine that we have, you know, and it's not just like, oh, we came up with this. Like, in order to come up with a belief in the Catholic Church, like, there are lots of years upon years upon years of, like, these councils that we've had.
Almost,
you know,
it's about, yeah. like, 2000, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. But it's like, you know, and I can go to a mass in Florida, in Missouri, in Texas, in Wisconsin, and, like, the mass is going to be the mass. Yes, you might have a, you know, the priest might have a slightly different gospel or, like, homily, but the gospel's going to be the same, the reading's going to be the same. You know, like, overall, like, yeah, there are cultural differences between, like, that's actually kind of a cool thing, I think. Like, going to mass in, like, Arizona and Hawaii, for instance, is really different than here because of maybe the music's a little different. But, like, the belief itself is the same. And, like, sometimes when you get, like, I've talked to family members who have gone to non-denominational or Protestant churches, and, like, they'll say, oh, I really liked this pastor that we had, but he left, and now we have a new guy, and he's changing all of our beliefs. I'm like, then that's his church. That's not, like, the church. That's his church. Like, I'm trying to tell these people, I'm like, then he's creating his own church. Like, if there's no doctrine, if there's no stability, if there's no, like, foundation to go off of, then he's building his own church. Right. And that's kind of like you said, like, that scares you when it's like, is this what Jesus wants? Like, me to just come up with my own interpretation and that's what I'm spreading? Or does he want a little bit more, like, this is the way it is, you know?
Right. I started
this
asking,
is my teaching.
What is the truth? What is the fullness of God's truth? And the lights, the music, the community, like, these are all just, things that appeal to human preferences.
They're good things, yeah. But like, they're not.
They are good things.
They're all good things. Community's great. Music's great. But like, when it comes to, I think, our faith, I think we got to have a little more, you know, I don't know what the right term is.
Truth.
Yeah, truth. Right? Yeah, truth.
What is the will of God? And that's the big question.
But it's where are your priorities?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Where does community, where does music fall on the priority list?
Yeah.
Right.
So did you like, you must have left that church. Like, you didn't go back to that one.
Right.
Did you like sprint right away to a Catholic church, or like how did all that go?
I did.
Yeah.
I did sprint right away to the Catholic church because I had a friend. One of my closest friends in Brownsville was a practicing Catholic. And from hanging out, he just finally asked, like, "Hey, Lorenzo, like, you're always going to church on Sunday. Like, which church do you go to in town?" And I said, "Oh, I go to this one. It's a non-denominational church." And I was there at his house having breakfast with him, his mom, and his cousin. And they were like,
a literal audible gasp comes out.
Yeah. He looked down at his breakfast and he was like, "You heathen." I was like, "What the hell? Like, what do you mean, man, heathen? Like, we like read scripture, we like sing," and they're just looking at me like I was so lost. And I was like, "Man, I don't know what to think." And kept on reading the Bible. Oh, I came across, the YouTube algorithm, or rather God, sent me Father Mike Schmidt's most watched video, which is Why Be Catholic.
Okay.
And I saw that. Favorite video. And I was like, "Oh man, he made some really good points." And then I reluctantly went to mass with my buddy who called me a heathen. And I genuflected. I took the Eucharist. Actually, no, I didn't take the Eucharist because I hadn't gone to mass in years. Yeah. I was like, "Oh, I need to go to confession before I take the Eucharist."
Sure.
And it felt right because I was already searching at that point in my life. I believed everything. I believed that Jesus was who he claimed to be and did everything that he did. And that it made sense. All of it made sense finally for the first time. And I kept on going back and I naturally went to confession and I confessed everything. And it felt like all the holes in my heart and my soul were being filled slowly. Yeah.
Confession has that way.
It does.
Yeah.
I find it interesting that you mentioned before how you went along this path of wanting material wealth, right?
Yeah.
And as you yearned for more material wealth and more material wealth, you kind of drifted further and further and further, right, away from this idea that God exists, right? We weren't at Jesus yet. We just said, "All right, God exists." But as you continue to pursue material wealth, you go further and further away. But then it takes this desperation of you losing everything, all this material wealth you had tried to get. Now you have nothing.
Upside down.
Now you can follow. Right? Now you can follow. Now you can start to understand the nature of who God is. Now you can understand the nature of who Jesus is. These, you know, the people at your Bible study that said, you know, to suffer is to know Christ, right? I think of the young rich man who tells Jesus, "Teacher, I've done all of these commandments that Moses had given. What else do I need to do to enter the kingdom of heaven? Go sell all your possessions, come follow me." And he walks away sad because he had many things. It's impossible for him to follow Jesus because he has all these things. But you're kind of in that same situation. You're like, "Well, I've got these material things. I wanted these material things." All of a sudden you find out, "I really have nothing." now I need to find something that I can have. It's cool. I mean, you know, it's not an atypical story, you know, for people to, out of desperation or out of a rock bottom moment where we realize that the things of the world, they don't satisfy us.
Yeah. And, you know, I would say more so than just hitting rock bottom financially and materially, I was spiritually bankrupt because I was betrayed by somebody loved, my business partner, who I had housed in one of my rental properties, who was managing the other properties, who was managing the construction projects, who I trusted, who I wired tens of thousands of dollars to, and who I had known for almost 2 years, betrayed me like that and was gaslighting me, manipulating me, like denying me, telling me that I was like egocentric, greedy when I confronted him about the books. And I was lost. Like, I stopped having faith in my judgment. I was like, I don't know what to do. I don't trust myself with making decisions anymore after that. Mm. So, yeah.
So you go to Mass with your buddy who called you Heathen. You've gone to confession. So you've already been, you were already confirmed, right?
Yeah, I went through all my sacraments. Okay, great.
So,
and I went peace.
So then where do we go from there? Because we are not in Brownsville, Texas.
We're not, man. We're like
Manitowoc, Wisconsin.
Total opposite end.
That's a good question.
Total, I guess, north.
Right.
We are directly north. We are almost as north as you can get in the Midwest.
And that's almost as south as you can get. So
I have so many people ask me, how in the world did you end up in Manitowoc, Wisconsin?
I'm thinking that almost this whole time. I'm like, you're from Brownsville.
And I guess that my nutshell answer to that question is,
we don't
God.
Need the nutshell. We need the
God brought me here.
Give me everything.
Yeah, no, how did you come up here, man?
God brought me here through people. So, just about a month after that all started to unwind, I went to a real estate investing workshop in West Palm Beach, Florida, and I met this guy who was running a chain of restaurants and also building a real estate portfolio, lo and behold, here in Wisconsin. Okay. He's got like over 200 rental units, and he's got this crazy rags-to-riches story. And we connected, and after the conference, we stayed in touch. And then just after a couple months, he was like, hey, man, like, you know, you talked about the software you're developing. I think it could really help me with my business. Like, I'm interested in becoming one of your customers. Because I was also developing a software for real estate investors. I was using that own software to acquire investments and do transactions for myself. So he became my customer. He had no idea how to use it for months. And despite that, he kept on paying me. And he was like, hey, man, like, can you just like fly up here and show me how to use it? I was like, what? I've never had any of one of my software customers ask that. And I said, okay, well, that's going to cost you some more money. Like, I'm going to have to come up here, fly up here, get a hotel, like Ubers and stuff. And I'm going to charge a consulting fee. He's like, okay, sure. How much? I said, this much. Thinking he would say no. He's like, okay, done. Let's do it.
You're like, okay, just use my software. All right.
How nice is it to just be like, go ahead, money.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. <I'm>
So I did that. I flew up here and I consulted him and his brother for about 3 days. And we set up a marketing campaign to pick up some real estate investment deals in the area, and they got a bunch of leads. I think they picked up 2 deals from that, which is a pretty good return on your investment. And then a month later, they asked me to become their operation manager for their acquisition department of their real estate firm. And I was like, well, I mean, I'm like a business owner, you know. I have other customers. Like, my primary focus is to grow my software company, not to like basically take on a part-time job. And, you know, at the time, I was upside down in debt. I was paying $3,000 a month in interest-only payments on three nightmare properties in another state. Wow. That each needed tens of thousands of dollars in rehab that you know, was stolen. And I was like, I think I'm just gonna take the job. Like, why not? You know, I need the money. So I took it, and I worked remotely for him as an operation manager for about 4 months. And it was difficult to produce results, I would say. Like that wasn't my strong suit. Like, he asked me if I could do it, and I had a vision, and the execution of my vision did not yield fruitful results. And it was like, I'd say mid-October of 2023 when like he finally had like this coming to Jesus conversation with me. And it was like a really heated conversation. He's like, we spent this much money and we haven't been able to make a return. Like, we need to like fix this. And like, that was the first time that he had broken like character with me, because he had always like treated me like the golden child, because like I had always been like golden goose type of thing. And that's what I was like, dude, I need to make this work, because I was still like upside down in debt, and like when I really wanted to continue working with him. And at the time I was dating this girl too who I honestly thought I was gonna marry. And you know, I feel like I had like everything going on in life that I could have possibly wanted. Like, I had a lot of friends. I had a girl who I really loved. I was there with my family in South Texas. I was making good money. And then suddenly that was all about to get uprooted. I was going to move to Wisconsin just to save my opportunity. And I did it. I told my girl who I was dating that I was going to be gone for just, you know, a few weeks. And after I solved the problem, then I come back and I don't know, we'd take it from there. And a few weeks turned into about a month and a half, and I came back down for the holiday. And then I went back up after the holiday, the winter holiday, and it made sense to stay there and learn from their business. And that's what happened. I also got connected with the church here.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and here you are.
And here
so
I am.
So that was, yeah, October, you said, of last
2023.
So about a year. You've been here for almost,
yeah,
a year.
Yeah, that's over when I moved up here. Yeah.
Nice.
And I became a missionary through the diocese too.
Nice.
And there's a missionary program.
What does that entail? What does that look like?
That entails, I would compare it to like almost getting a, like an associate's degree at a community college, like in terms of the coursework and like the commitment. It entails like around 8 in-person retreats at the diocese, and a decent amount of coursework. Like, you have to watch videos, you have to answer short form essays and all that stuff, and also lead your own mission, your own missionary initiative within the diocese.
Oh, wow. So what's your initiative right now? Or are you still going through the process of it?
But yeah, yeah. My initiative right now is growing the men's ministry here in the diocese. Like, we've only had one social event so far, and like, we didn't really get much penetration in terms of the promotion and the outreach that we tried to do. But I mean, we're still going to keep at it. Like, we're going to try to get more people to show up to the next social.
That's awesome, man.
Are you involved? Is that the what is it? The Forge? Is that?
Yeah, the Forge.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. So, yeah, the Forge is the men's ministry, and we plan to have different events that are focused on different topics. One is going to be on like education, and the one that I'm leading is on evangelization.
Oh, neat.
So, come as you are. You don't even have to be a Catholic man. I mean, you just have to be at least 18-year-old and be a male. But it's focused on evangelizing the culture here.
Yeah. When is that? When is it?
Well, we need to set up the next social.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, actually, to be determined. We had the first one happen. The first one happened a few weeks ago. I wasn't even there for the first one. I was at a business conference. But that's my initiative that I'm leading right now.
I love that, man.
Yeah.
We need more
mm-hmm.
strong Catholic men. Christian men, but Catholic men.
Right. Too. No, Catholic men.
Catholic men, yeah. 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 Awesome, man.
That's the one thing that we, I mean, that's the one thing we don't really have.
Yeah.
Here, for sure. Because I feel like, I mean, I'm a knight of Columbus. Lorenzo's a knight of Columbus.
Are you?
Mm-hmm.
I should probably join. Feel left out, man.
Don't do it.
I feel left out now.
Don't do it.
What do you say don't do it?
Okay, so like, here's the issue that I have with the Knights. I love the idea of the Knights of Columbus. It's great. I think fraternity for men is very important. As a fraternity man myself in college, guys being dudes. Guys
they're great.
Being dudes, right? Is really important. I think either of our wives or any woman who's got, you know, brothers or guy friends who are friends with other guys, right? There is a specific type of friendship that blossoms between men that is wholly different than inter-female relationships, right? Friendships, whatever. The issue that I have with the men's ministry, maybe in general, not just the Knights. The Knights have this problem too. I've been to a few meetings, but like there isn't this like sense of like, I thought it was going to be guys, men hanging out, chatting, talking, doing these things instead of like, hey, here's our meeting. Here's where we're going to give a bunch of money to this week, which is great. Don't get me wrong. I think it's phenomenal how much that the Knights give. We give a lot of money right. to
all great causes.
Great causes in the parish, in our community. It's been great. It is absolutely great. The Knights do take care of our community, which is awesome. But we miss the fraternal part so much.
Okay.
I think a lot of it is because many of the Knights are very old or older, right? So they don't really, I don't know if it's an energy thing, but it's like that culture isn't there. Like what I would envision is not like a social club, but that like, you know, guys sitting around, sipping on whiskey, smoking a cigar, waxing poetic, talking about religion, philosophy, politics, sports, kind of whatever it happens to be. I think if you are a guy and you've ever had the experience of sitting with another guy, smoking a cigar and just chatting for a while, or just sitting with a guy over a drink or over a beer at a bar or whatever, just talking with a guy, it is so very, very different. It is so very, very connecting. And lifelong relationships, friendships with men begin at those kind of interactions.
Right.
And when we don't have those interactions, those friendships don't develop. They become passing acquaintances, which isn't the same thing. I always like to joke. I have a friend who was the best man at my wedding, who I consider for a long time to be my best friend. Not John's my best friend. What's the meme? Friendship ended with.
It's
a really out there meme. I'm not going to.
No, I know. I'll figure it out.
But like if you're a guy and I went to college with this guy for many, many years. He was the best man at my wedding. I was the best man at his wedding. The thing with guys is that whenever we get together, whether it's been 2 days, a day, 2 hours, 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years, we can just pick up where we left off.
Yeah.
When it comes to that.
That's accurate.
The issue that comes with that is you can never really develop a deeper sense of like spiritual connection because you're not interacting that much. I think the same thing can be said with like, if you have a romantic relationship with a lady friend, you know, or your fiance or your spouse, if you're married, you wouldn't be able to just see each other for like a day and then like not see each other for 2 years and then pick up right where you left off. That's not going to work.
Right.
It just doesn't, you know,
You're not going to get a spiritual connection.
You're not going to get a spiritual connection. You can't build a romantic relationship built off of that. The same thing I think happens with male friendships. It's so diluted with surface level passing conversation because we have all these other things. We have all these other addictions that we have issues with. We're so damn busy.
Yeah. You know? And we also like to talk about the most surface level dumb stuff sometimes too.
Which is true.
Which
is true. But you also need.
But you need that.
There needs to be.
Because that's how dudes bond.
Well, there needs to be a point where it goes deeper.
Yeah, yeah.
There needs to be, and I think we miss that right now. We don't have that right now. Now, granted, it's a two-way street, right? I think especially men, we have to get out a lot further out of our shells to pursue this kind of connection that we're talking about right now, which is one of the reasons we do this podcast, right? Is to try to establish deeper connections between people who are sharing their stories of their faith life. That's the problem I have with the nights. I know I went on a really long time.
So there's not, there lacks that deep spiritual connection between the men.
Right.
Yeah.
They do great things.
Absolutely.
You know, now, I don't think it's established there. Now, you might be able to say, like, Cameron, why you want it so bad? Why don't you do it? That's a fair point. That's a fair point. I have a kid.
Yeah.
No, that's a fair point. But when you're brand new in the Knights, and if you're brand new in any organization, you know, it's not really.
It's hard to be bold and like change the culture.
Yeah, it's hard to be bold when.
It's like going to a new workplace and then being like, I'm going to change the culture on day one. Like, you can't do that.
Well, especially when you're talking about a man's ministry.
Yeah.
So like men, a good man is a good father. He's a good husband. He's a good, he's a good friend. He's a good Catholic, right? I have one kid and he's 5 months old. So like, I will defer always to like a grandfather who has generations of kids from his patronage, right? Or a father of four or a father of, you know, even two kids, you know,
right.
Like I defer to that expertise. I have that chain of respect. I'm just breaking in the game here. You know, I haven't had to really teach my son matters of faith yet.
Right.
Because he's 5 months old. We can keep reading him the book about Jesus and the saints, but he is not understanding any of it yet. So it's really hard to break into that if it's not already kind of established. So it is kind of, I am happy to hear that, you know, Lorenzo, you are a part of this men's reach out ministry, and we're trying to get a deeper connection with the men of our parish here, which is good.
Yeah, I think it's a really good thing because I think the women's, like, especially the mom's ministry.
Mom's ministry is great here.
It's huge and it's great. And I think they meet like every other week, if not every week. Yeah, they did. Yeah.
Wow.
I think they meet every other week, but then I think it is every week because sometimes there's like, if you can't make it Tuesday, you can do it on like a Friday or Thursday. I can't remember.
Is it a new mom's ministry or?
It's been established for a while.
It's been established for a while.
At least since I've been here. It's had a couple of different.
Like a newborn.
Oh
yeah, Elizabeth started going there after Blaze was born.
All types of moms. Moms of like teenagers are in it. Moms of newborns.
Moms Laura, of one. Moms of six.
Laura
seven,
went to the first
eight.
Meeting, and then she's had to work every Tuesday.
Oh, it sucks.
Every since then, so she was like so bummed today. She was like, oh, I have this work. She's off from work, but she had a work meeting today. She's like, oh, come on. But they do great. They do great
stuff.
It's
great.
So
they do great.
Hopefully. And hopefully through your work that we can build up a good men's ministry here because I do think we're lacking that, even though that there's a lot of great men that I know in this parish. Like, I feel like, you know, we're all individually great, but, like, let's all get together and be great. So all right. I hope you can kind of be the spark of that. That'd be awesome.
Most like we have a worldwide culture. It's like, what is a man?
Yeah, it's a whole different
you know,
topic.
We don't even as a culture know what a woman is.
Yeah, so.
Well, that's dying a bit, thank goodness.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
But like, what does it mean to be a man? What does that mean to be a Catholic man, right?
beyond the gender argument. Yeah.
Yeah. What, you know, if you ask a teenager, a young man, like, what male role models do you have for a good Catholic man?
Andrew Tate.
And not Andrew Tate. Isn't he Muslim?
I thought he was Muslim.
Yeah. Originally he's Muslim. I think he's also a pimp.
Michael Knowles.
Knowles, I think, yeah.
I don't know. That's the first like media person came to mind.
Well, like, I mean, you know,
Mark Wahlberg.
Mark Wahlberg, yeah.
Jonathan Ramey.
Yeah, Jonathan Ramey, sure.
The Halo apps helped a lot.
Jim Gaffigan.
Jim
Gaffigan. He's got some. He's yeah.
Jonathan Rooney.
But like here's the thing. Like when you look at somebody who is a good role model, like
I would say Jim Gaffigan's good role.
It doesn't
model.
Have like, to be
he's good well, dad. He's
but
good.
But it doesn't have to be. They can't be perfect.
Yeah. No. I think he's a good dad. I think he's a good, you know, husband. Yeah, and he's a did he speak at the? He was at like a conference. Was he at the Eucharist conference or was that?
I don't remember.
I can't remember if he was there. He spoke. He did speak when the Pope came to America though, a few years ago.
Francis, Pope Francis.
Yeah. He and Marky Mark Wahlberg.
Well, you know, it's good to look towards celebrities. It's good to look to the saints, you know, Saint Joseph.
Obviously, yeah, definitely.
For sure, you know.
I feel like bishops and priests, I don't know, like when I compare to like 10 years ago when I was in high school, I feel like I know, and maybe this is just because I'm more serious about my faith, or maybe it's technology and access to internet, whatever, but I feel like I know a lot more. And this is like probably one of the beauties of social media. I know you have feelings on social media, but I do think there's some good behind it too. I feel like I know more priests, maybe not personally, but like know who they are.
That's the first time that's happened.
You're good. I just stopped talking because we'll cut it out. I'm sorry.
So good.
You're good. You're good.
Are you good? Okay.
Yeah, I feel like I know more. Names of like priests and bishops. So I feel like there's more models to look up to as a young Catholic male.
Yeah. Which is good. I think we also don't want to get away from the Catholic role models who are in our own lives.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's the whole thing with the building this men's ministry though, is like, that's what my original point was. Like, there's all these great, great Catholic men, a lot better than me in this community. That like I'd love to just be like consider, you know, sit down and, you know, have a beer together at this men's ministry event, you know. Like, but you know, so hopefully your hard work, Lenzo, and all your and prayers for that ministry too, I hope it takes off, because it's been something in my heart for a while, but I just don't have the guts to do it. So thanks for doing it, because now I don't have to do it.
We could do it together.
Yeah,
join the ministry.
No, I think it's one of those things that are like, I hear about it and then I kind of forget about it, and now I'm gonna hear it again. So
yeah,
hear about it again.
Yeah, I think it's kind of hard still with a newborn, but or not a newborn, I guess an infant now. But you know, and they meet at like what, 6 o'clock?
6 a.m.
The Forge.
Yeah. The Forge. Yeah.
6 a.m. usually. Yes. Yeah, so that's for the educational events, not for the social events.
I see. Okay. Sure.
Yeah.
So what's the future look like for you?
That's a great question. That's something that has been weighing on my heart and mind quite heavily, actually. I am discerning that.
Are you discerning priesthood?
I was discerning the priesthood.
You were?
For a short period. Nice. Yeah, a short period of time. Nice. Yeah, I had several priests come up to me and say, hey, Lorenzo, like, have you considered religious life? And I said, well, what? Like, I don't know. I've never considered that. And they said, oh, well, we think you'd be a great priest. And I was discerning that for a period of time. But I would say that I've had several people. I've heard the Holy Spirit speak to me through several people. And I'd say I'm leaning more toward marriage than the priesthood right now.
Every good Catholic man should at least discern priesthood. Not necessarily go into priesthood, but at least discern it. So that's good. Right. At least discern it then.
That's good. Marriage is still great. Marriage is still great.
Marriage is good.
Highly recommend it.
Yeah, I like it. Good. You know, it's fun.
Yeah. So like, okay, so you're a dating man, right? So you're you're in that kind of sphere, right? Are people still using the apps? Is that still a thing? How is that going for you? Because we've had people on the show who have dated many different ways. John and I both met our wives online. Julia, who we've had on the podcast, met her husband online.
Yeah, Catholic Match. That's how I met Laura.
On Catholic Match. Itself, Match?
Right? Yeah,
I didn't know. Mine wasn't Catholic Match, but it was still, you know, like online. But what does that sphere look like now? You having the same experience? How are you going about that as you kind of discern?
Yeah. So I got off the dating apps, I'd say, a few months ago. I had a short fling with a girl that I dated in the summer. And then I decided to give meeting people in person a go, because that had never been my focus. I'd say that since I graduated high school, I've been on every dating app, like throughout college and after college, and almost every relationship had started from online dating. I just decided to I don't know, just
give it a go naturally.
Yeah, give it a go naturally.
Let it happen.
So how's that going?
Right now, well, no, I'm not talking to any women right now. If you're asking that, yeah.
No, I'm asking where are you going to meet people?
Through the church, right now, I'd say, really, going out to social events, and nice. I would say that for the most part, I spend almost all my time working on my business, really, more than anything right now. I'd say that's my main focus. And if I happen to meet a loving, virtuous woman who I enjoy spending time with, then I'm going to continue spending time with that person for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where I'm at right now, I'd say, with that.
So you're just kind of letting it happen organically?
Yeah.
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 That's understandable. Because said, you know, sometimes you're on these apps and you're on it for so long, it's like... Well, it ain't working, so I gotta try something different, you know.
And additionally, I'm not sure how long I'm gonna be up here, you know? My entire family is in Texas. I moved up here for work, and now I'm working entirely remotely. And I'm really just here. I'd say that the main reason I'm here is to finish my mission.
Yeah.
I was offered a seat in the missionary program, and I was like, oh, man, this is a great opportunity. And I have so many family and friends back home. So what are you doing up there still? Yeah. You're alone up here. And they mean in terms of family and most of my friends. And I tell them, well, I'm going to finish this mission for sure. And then I'll see where the Lord takes me from there. So there's always that in the back of my mind. I don't want to have to. I would hate to go from dating a girl here into a long distance relationship if I end up moving back to Texas, because that's what I went through when I left Texas last year, and it was very painful. I honestly thought I was going to marry that girl, and we tried making long distance work when I moved to Wisconsin, and it didn't work. It was like a pretty painful experience to go through that. And part of me just has apprehension to open my heart again, I guess, when I don't know with good certainty if I'm going to stay up here past my missionary program.
Right. Well, there's lots of different chapters of your life, too. You know, it's sort of like, hey, right now I'm focusing on my work and my missionary.
27.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, and if it happens, it happens. And if it doesn't, I'm not going to force it.
Right.
You know, I'm just going to let kind of... Jesus take the wheel, I guess. I don't know.
That's my attitude about it right now.
Yeah. That's a good way to do it right now, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. It's so difficult, right? So there's something to be said, I think, for putting down your roots, putting down your roots in a place where you are active, in a place where you are ministering, in a place where you are living, right? So, you know, you can do ministry up here, and the people that you minister to are up here. I think it's maybe a product of our generation, you know, this whole like grass is greener on the other side. Like, where's the next place? We kind of all have this, our generation has this nomadic type of style, like, oh, well, I'm only going to be here for so long, and then I'm going to go somewhere else, or I'm going to go somewhere else. Maybe I'll go to a different country, or maybe I'll go to a different state. I don't know. I think as we become more worldly, as our culture becomes more worldly, we have to become more community focused, and wherever you put down your roots is wherever you put down your roots. I'm not trying to say that to keep you in Manitowoc, but I think, and Elizabeth and I have talked about this, that like neither of us have the desire to leave Manitowoc, because this is where we are churches. This is where we've made friends. This is where we've both got our jobs. This is the town that we've decided. This is where the Grinkies are going to be. And it's so heartbreaking to have friends leave with this pursuit of, you know, the grass is greener in California or a different part of the state or somewhere else in the Midwest, or this other job, I want to pursue this career option or whatever. And then all of a sudden, you know, they're in their 30s or their late 30s and they're like, oh, well, now I want to get married. Well, hold on a second. You know, where are your priorities, right? I think it's a lot of it's a product of our culture, you know, this hustle mentality, this, you know, your career's got to come first and you got to make sure that you make the bag before you settle down, or you want to make sure you get out all your wild side before you settle down. And I think we miss so many years of building a community. You know, and I hope maybe you do stay in Wisconsin. Maybe you don't. Right now you're a part of a missionary program. Maybe the Lord pulls you somewhere else. Maybe he brings you, you know, you discern to go back down to Texas. Maybe you discern to go to Wyoming. I don't know. Mm-hmm. That's where Bishop Riggin's from. He was the bishop of Wyoming. Wyoming's a beautiful, beautiful state.
It's a great state.
You know, it's just kind of this, let's never lose the mentality of like, we don't always have to be going somewhere. You know, sometimes it's okay to just to move forward, but it's okay to move forward where you are.
Yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, wherever you are, it's important to be present and to build a community. But I also kind of get like, and I moved like 100 miles north, so it's not even like that even far. But I also get like, you know, being by friends and family and stuff. So I'm a family guy, but like, so I get it too. Of like, hey, I like it up here. It's good. I built a good community up here. Did my mission, but you know, the Lord's telling me to head on back to Southern Texas too. So, but we're happy you're here though. I mean, this has been a lot of fun, a lot of pleasure getting to know you and such too. So, yeah, man, we're happy you're here and doing good work, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's bold for somebody. I gotta say, like, you've been here for like a year and like to boldly move up here, like not anticipating living here for a year, but like coming up here and then also like becoming this active with a community, with a church and with missionary work. I think it's like, it's really admirable. I think it's really cool.
Yeah, man. You know, moving up here, brought me the closest I've ever been to God. Being deprived of family and friends when I first moved up here was exactly what I needed to listen to God's call and discern Him and to achieve this formation of faith that I've got going on for myself right now. And just, I mean, the relationships I've made here have been, I think, what I've needed my entire life. I've never had friends who put faith at the center of their life.
Yeah.
I mean, to this degree, at least, for sure. And this is what I want, honestly. Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Do you think that's something you could bring back down to Texas?
So this is my current vision. I want to become, I want to continue my missionary work. And I believe that my next mission would probably be to evangelize the culture in South Texas, because I'd say that it's a very like culturally Catholic type of region, not practicing like sure. up here
yeah.
in this area. And I owe it to my roots to go make a positive impact or lead people closer to God down there for sure. Beyond that, I would love to become a global citizen and to do missionary work across the world, particularly in Europe. I mean, just the stuff that I'm seeing on the news and in England about how like this once great Catholic society is basically like secular anti-Christian being taken over by Islam. Like, I mean, I would love to become a missionary and spend maybe a period of time in England or in Europe. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of sad where, like, especially Europe has so many beautiful, stunning Catholic churches that are...
Oh, beautiful and stunning Catholic countries.
Yeah.
There's some countries. I mean,
Poland. Sure. Poland.
Oh, I want to go to Poland.
Poland. Yeah. I saw
some of the Baltic countries are just, they're almost 100% Catholic.
I saw a map of Poland, and I don't know if Poland has, like, a... I'm not sure the status of Catholicism in Poland. I'm pretty sure it's still pretty Catholic, and it's not like England where things are really swaying away from Christianity. I think Poland's still pretty strongly Catholic, but I saw a map of like all of the Catholic churches in Poland, and it was just Poland. Like it was all filled in because there's that many Catholic churches just like, or maybe just churches overall. I don't know if it was Catholic churches, but churches overall in Poland. There was like a tiny little spot in Poland that didn't have a church. I think it was like, I don't know.
A lake?
Yeah, or maybe like a huge mountain or something. I don't know. I have no idea. But yeah, I mean, it's a shame to see like Europe with all these stunning old historic churches that have so much history and just... go empty, or not just empty, but like being taken over, or the communities, you know, being, I guess, I don't want to say punished. That is a different word for
it.
But
persecuted.
Persecuted. Yeah, persecuted. Thank you. So I was like another P word, but persecuted. So
there's some larger issues.
There are. But, we need to fight back, though. You know, like we got to step up for our faith.
There's something to always be said for tradition and culture, for where you are. I had a citizen when I was taking citizenship in ninth grade when I was a freshman. We always used to see America as the great melting pot, right? That... which is a good idea. It's a good thought, right? People come and everybody's kind of in the same American deal, right? But the textbook said rejected this image of this great American melting pot, and instead called it an American mosaic, where everybody kind of keeps their cultural heritage, and we all kind of create this American culture built off of everyone else's culture. To an extent, I really like that image, right? That anybody can become an can become American, still hold their family traditions while still holding like this larger traditional ideal of America, of freedom, the freedom that we do have. Whether you like it or not, America's a Christian country. You can't convince me otherwise. You can whine about separation of church and state all you want. God is all over the founding documents.
I don't know what to tell you. Yeah.
It's all over the founding documents. You might say, well, it's not Catholic. I don't really care. It's America's a Christian nation. The government isn't going to create Christianity as the religion of the country, but God is all over his fingerprints are all over all of our founding documents.
It's literally on our,
it's on our money.
It's on our money.
Yeah. Yeah. The greatest economic system in the world. There's something to be said about the culture that Christianity and Catholicism has created throughout the world still needs to be preserved. And there's the prevailing narrative as we become more secular that these things need to be pushed off to the side, when Catholicism and Christianity has created everything we know today. Especially when, you know, people don't like it, but when Christopher Columbus came over here, he baptized thousands of natives.
Right.
His people didn't do great things.
Like, yeah.
Didn't do great things.
A lot of bad things.
A lot of bad things. A lot of bad things. But he came here to find the new world, yes, but he also baptized thousands of people. The missionaries that came through even in Wisconsin, Francis Xavier came and baptized many of the natives here. Christianity created our country. And I think that needs to be preserved. I think that's a good thing. It's not to say that like other world religions haven't created great things. I would argue not as great things, but religion for all of human history has created great things in our world. And a lot of those things need to be preserved. Because at the end of the day, I mean, man's religion, you know, is still man's search for God. You know, whether you might be looking in the wrong place, but man is still searching for God, whether or not we like it or not, it's happening in every human heart. You know, Lorenzo, you talked about, you even had, there might've been times where you weren't looking, but you still had moments in your life where you were still a man searching for God. There's something to be said about preserving that in our world.
Yeah. I do believe that everybody searches for God all the time. Not God directly, but at least for the truth. Because when I was an atheistic agnostic scientist in college, I was searching for the truth. That's why I was reading that book. That's why I was studying science. That's why I did everything I did. I was like trying to seek what was real. And what does the Catholic Catechism teach? That God is truth. So yeah, we all have it in us, in our heart, inscribed that God is the truth and God is love.
It's good stuff.
Good stuff.
It's good stuff.
All good things.
Yeah. Well, we thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, this is a great.
Criminally short episode. An hour and a half.
Hour and a half.
All right, criminally short for us, but I don't have the energy anymore to do a 2.5 hour.
It was short, but it was also like very
short and powerful. Just like Lorenzo, he's a short guy.
Just like Napoleon.
Just like Napoleon. Yeah, everything worked out for Napoleon.
Yeah.
Was Napoleon French? He was French the whole time, right?
Was he French? Yeah, he's like, French, right?
I think like French nationally. I think he was born in Sardinia.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
Cultural appropriation. Napoleon.
Whatever works, right?
He actually wasn't that short, you know, comparatively. He was like 5'7". Right? Wasn't he? Yeah, it was like
totally
normal.
He wasn't really that short.
Taller than me.
5'7", that's like a short king, I guess.
Short king. Like,
which was totally average at the time.
It's totally.
Yeah, what's the whole thing with Napoleon being short? Like, who?
Pop culture, probably.
I think his detractors probably painted him.
Because he was shorter than a Roman or something? Like,
well, he probably just said he was short, so he'd look weak.
Yeah.
And then he was weak and then failed and then they exiled him to an island.
All his opponents were like, yeah, this guy is shorter than us, so he's short.
Well, actually, like at the end of World War II, after the Japanese surrendered to the Americans, I think it was Eisenhower, or Churchill, had a picture taken with him and Emperor Hirohito to show the Japanese people how short he was compared to General Eisenhower. Total Chad move.
Yeah, it's pretty Chad move.
But
right
it broke.
Especially because Eisenhower is tall, wasn't it?
It broke even further the mystery around the emperorship of the Japanese believed that the emperor is a divine right. So all of a sudden, this emperor figure has failed, has fallen to the Allies, and he's also short.
He's also short. Yeah.
It was a total Chad move.
It is Chad move.
A short king, you know?
Hey, short kings. Hey, we're out there.
I should figure out who that was, just so I don't want to, like, wrongly put Eisenhower in this camp of, like, jerks or something.
I think if I was Eisenhower, I don't know. Was it a general?
Yeah. General Dwight Eisenhower.
It also sounds like a Patton move, but also I feel like Patton wouldn't care that much about that.
Wasn't he in Africa? Patton was in Africa, wasn't he?
He was in Europe and in Africa.
Mm.
So I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, no, World War II was nuts.
Yeah. It was a world war. Pretty big, man. It's pretty big.
Well, anyway, any other short kings you want to talk about?
No, Earl Boykin from the Bucks back in the day. That's all I got.
Michael Redd was pretty short too, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's over 6 foot. He wasn't that short.
There's not a lot of Bucks who are
Muggsy Bogues. I don't know. Wasn't he?
I don't think he played for the Bucks though.
No, he didn't. No, Earl Boykin was one of the shortest NBA players, and he played for the Bucks for like 2 years.
Kings.
Back when the Bucks were bad. They're bad this year, but they're bad. Really bad back in the day.
Yeah. Short Kings, where it's at.
It's all right. It's I'm 5'6". Everything worked out.
It's all right. Whatever.
Yeah, my son's pretty short too, and it's working out for him.
My wife's shorter than me. That's all.
That's all I care about. Yeah.
You know. But hey, if you find a wife that's taller than you, that's fine too. But you know, she's shorter than me.
Love is a choice. Fun fact.
Yeah. choose to love.
Fun fact. Choose to love. It's better to choose to love than to be forced.
All love, man. All love.
All love. Aaron Rodgers.
Ayahuasca.
All right, Lorenzo, thanks so much for joining us today, buddy. I really appreciate it. This is a lot of fun.
Well, it was a pleasure to be here.
As always, I forget to do the thing every time. If you'd like to be like Lorenzo, you can email us at humblyspeakingpod@gmail.com, or you can chat with John or I. I both frequent the 6:30 p.m. Mass on Sundays or the 9:30 a.m. Mass. My wife and I are there with the kid.
Or the 4 p.m. at Waldo.
Yeah, we're around. Or you can just go to the parish office, call the parish office, email somebody at the parish office, then get a hold of us. It's fine. Please pray for us. We are praying for you. What do I normally say?
Our Father Mike Schmitz, right?
No,
it's Father Mike Schmidt's closing line.
I think it is. I feel like, praise be Jesus Christ.
Amen.
There it is.